The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, it's a brand new week. Lucky us! Yay! Or not. Well, here we are. It's a Monday, and this is going to be a roller coaster ride of a week. So if you don't like roller coasters, and I don't, maybe Dramamine or something. You know what else is good for an upset stomach? Marijuana. Yeah, cannabis will settle the upset stomach. But, you know, then it makes it hard to talk sometimes for some of us, for me. Anyway, as much as I enjoy the weed, I won't ever do it before a show because I can't put three words together to make a coherent sentence. So, yeah, believe me, if I ever do smoke some of that before the show, you'll know because, you know, I occasionally stumble over words here and there, occasionally, when I'm high, forget it. I will lose my train of thought in mid-word, forget about mid-sentence. So that won't happen. So I'm here on my own power today, but barely, because things really suck. I guess we can start with some good news. R. Kelly has been convicted on all counts. Now, aside from the press about R. Kelly, I don't know him. I don't know his music, not my cup of tea. And the stories that I heard about him in the years past so turned my stomach that I didn't want to know about him. But what we know is that he was not only convicted on racketeering charges, but on let me pull up the actual story. Of course, I don't have it right here. But everything. And that includes minor sex trafficking and such. I mean, I heard the stories about Aaliyah, and I remember how sad it was. She was a beautiful, talented young girl. Because she wasn't a woman. She was like 13, 14, 15 when he raped her. I guess repeatedly, he allegedly, reportedly married her so that he could get her an abortion when she was all of 15 years old. I hope he rots in jail for the rest of his life. Here's the conviction came down just over an hour ago from the Washington Post. A federal jury found him guilty on all nine counts in his sex trafficking and racketeering trial. He's 54 years old. He could face decades in prison. Good! Over nearly 30 years worth of allegations that he physically and sexually abused women and minors. Well, you know what? If he did it over 30 years, then he deserves a minimum of 30 years in prison. Listen to this. I mean, the more I read the story, the creepier it gets. The 45 witnesses called on by prosecutors described an elaborate system of abuse supported by Kelly's immense fame and professional power, as well as by the cooperation of his employees and close associates. As widely described in reports from the trial, numerous accusers, including one man, testified that they were underage when they met him. And then they said that he went on to control their lives. One woman alleged that she was forced into sexual encounters with other women and was unable to leave rooms without Kelly's permission. Another said he knowingly gave her herpes, an assertion seemingly backed by a personal physician who took the stand to discuss Kelly's medical history. One witness claimed that Kelly forced her to have an abortion. Another, here's what I was talking about, said Kelly told her he married Aaliyah in 1994 when she was 15, so that the up-and-coming singer could have an abortion. And let me just ask, where were Aaliyah's parents? Seriously, she's 14 and 15, stooping this piece of shit? I get that you had a singer, like a rock star and a movie star on your hands. Take care of your kids. Yeah, I'm in a mood today, as you can tell. What else? Okay. Oh, that. All right. That was the R. Kelly story that I copied and pasted. In other news, John Hinckley Jr. is getting an unconditional release. Name sound familiar? You know, we heard about Sirhan Sirhan and how some of the Kennedy family, he's the man who assassinated Robert Bobby Kennedy. Well, now Sirhan Sirhan is up for parole. And Bobby Kennedy, Robert Kennedy's son, he's a nut. You know, I understand that he does some good things or has done some good things, but he's an anti-vaxxer. And I'm sorry, I've got no use for him with that. So he's saying Sirhan Sirhan should be released. Well, apparently Rose Kennedy doesn't think so. But John Hinckley Jr., he's the guy who shot Ronald Reagan, didn't kill him, but paralyzed James Brady. That's who the White House briefing room is named for. That was Ronald Reagan's press secretary at the time. And he was paralyzed. He was made either a paraplegic or quadriplegic by Hinckley's bullet that day. So what? I don't get it. So you attempt to assassinate a president. You assassinate a presidential candidate, and you're not put in prison for the rest of your life? Where's the justice in this country? I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. Yeah, Culture Sculptor. Hi, welcome, Culture, to the chat room. He said maybe he'll shoot a bad guy this time. Well, you know, Ronald Reagan. But what about Jodie Foster? You know, Jodie Foster, he did that ostensibly to impress Jodie Foster because he was obsessed with her character in the movie Taxi Driver. We live in a twisted world. And now, you know, this week, everything is on the table. So, what you ask? Well, let's go through them, shall we? We have the government funding and the debt limit. So government funding. If they don't come up with a funding bill by Thursday, then on Friday, the government shuts down. Isn't that lovely? Yeah. And if the debt ceiling isn't raised by like December 15th, the U.S. could default for the very first time in history, something that simply cannot happen. Because if it does, we are all fucked and not in a good way. So they're playing their stupid games. Oh, those stupid reindeer games. But I gotta tell you about something that really freaked me out today. As you can tell, a few things did, right? But there's new polling out. And look, I hate relying on Politico for anything because they've shown their colors. They are a partisan publication. They lean Republican. Their reporting is stilted, but they do occasionally bring forth facts that I don't find anywhere else. So they have new polling. Okay, so it's Politico and Morning Consult. And according to this new polling, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, that's the BIF, remains quite popular. 56% support, 27% oppose. I'm just going to go through these results because they're all over the place. They say, we also asked what the voters thought about the size of the BIF package. And despite the price tag, this is how they write, despite the price tag. This one is $1.2 trillion over 10 years. That means basically $1.2 billion a year, which frankly is nothing. Now, to you and me, it's a lot of money because, you know, I'll never see $1.2 billion in my lifetime. But in the scope of the United States of America, the wealthiest nation on the planet ever in history, it's nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. $1.2 trillion. So let's see. They asked, what voters thought about the size of the BIF. And despite the price tag, fuck you, a majority, 57%, thought $1 trillion was the right amount or too little to spend. Yeah. 42% said too much. 43% said the right amount and 14% said too little. I'm in the 14%. We also asked voters who they would tend to blame more if the U.S. were to default on the national debt or if there were a government shutdown. Now, let me, before I get to the results of this question, let me just say, if the viewers, the readers, the people who were polled get it wrong, that's the fault of the media because you're not explaining to them how this is supposed to work. So let me read to you just the language that Politico used. Even though Democrats control Congress and the White House, voters tell us they will spread the blame around. Well, isn't that nice? Because the blame should go 100% to the Republicans. 100 fucking percent. And I'll explain why as we get there. Okay, shutdown. If there was a U.S. government shutdown, would you tend to blame the Democratic Party more, the Republican Party more, or both parties the same? And this poll came up with 32% said the Democratic Party, 36% said both parties equally, 24% said the Republican Party. Sorry, I had to find my buzzer. And, you know, and then the brilliant among us, the don't know and the no opinions were 8%. Okay, so if the government shuts down, that's them saying we will not fund the government. The president doesn't want to shut down, unlike the former guy who wanted the government shut down because he thought it would be make him look big and strong. Fucking asshole. All right, on to the default. If the United States were to default on the national debt, would you tend to blame the Democratic Party more, the Republican Party more, or both parties equally? Well, again, I'll already give you the buzzer because they're fucking wrong. Because if there's a default, the blame goes entirely to the Republicans. First of all, raising the debt ceiling just says we as a nation will pay the bills when they come due. The money we already agreed to spend, we will pay those bills. That's what the debt ceiling is. The debt ceiling now to be raised does not have anything to do with the BIF or the Build Back Better plan or anything else that's happening now or will happen in the future. This is to pay for past spending, money that Congress already allocated, including the $7 or $8 trillion that Donald Trump ran up the debt in his 4 years in office. That's unheard of. But you ever hear the networks talk about that? No, you don't. You know why? Because they're fucked up. Sorry, I told you I'm in a mood today, so bear with me. The networks don't report that, but they should. And if they did, maybe the people who are polled would have the right answer. The correct answer is, if the United States were to default on the national debt, you blame the goddamn Republicans because they're the ones doing this. So the House yesterday, over the weekend, passed a funding bill that includes suspending the debt ceiling till December of 2022. Guess what? While the idiot was in office, the Democrats did that. They suspended the debt ceiling pretty much for the entire four-year term. You remember, think back, in the 4 years the orange idiot held court in the Oval Office, did you ever hear about a fight over the debt ceiling? You didn't, because there wasn't one, because the Democrats were too responsible to do that. But you got Mitch McConnell, who refuses to allow his senators to vote in favor of raising the debt ceiling. In other words, he's saying we will tank the good faith and credit of the United States of America. Because it's on the Democrats. They can do it alone. And the only way they can do it alone is if they get rid of the goddamn filibuster, but we have Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who for some reason have the D next to their name when they're really Republicans. The whole thing is just infuriating. So this poll, how did it come down? If the United States were to default on the national debt, would you tend to blame the Democratic Party more, the Republican Party more, or both parties equally? Well, 39% said both parties equally. But 31% said the Democrats. and only 20% said the Republican Party. Again, that's the fault of the goddamn corporate mainstream media because they don't tell you the truth. And then the idiots among us, the I don't know and the no opinion crowd is 11%. Really? You can't even be informed on what the hell is happening in your country?
Yeah, I don't know.
Let me tell you why else I'm pissed about the media. So on Friday, I read to you those 6 points that I think CNN got a hold of the actual memo. I know Woodward and Costa wrote it about it in their book. The 6-point plan that Trump and his insurrectionist cronies came up with to overthrow the government, to overturn a free and fair election, and to install him back in the White House, dictator. They had a 6-point plan. I read it to you on Friday. Do you know that not one major news network reported it? Not ABC, not NBC, not CBS, certainly not Fox, not CNN, not MSNBC. None of them as a news thing. Now, maybe Rachel Maddow did. Maybe some of the nighttime MSNBC shows did. But as a news organization, NBC News did not cover that story. From what I understand, the only time it was mentioned on NBC News was by Seth, what's his name, at night. Seth, I'm drawing a blank on his name. You know, the late night guy. Really? What's his name? I can't even think of his name. Sorry, I told you I'm in a mood. You know. That is dereliction of duty. These fucking news organizations better stop playing partisan games and start just covering the news. That is a story that should have been reported on, but they didn't go there. What? Seth Meyers. Thank you. Seth Meyers, comedian, on at what? 12:30 at night? He's the only person on NBC that mentioned that 6-part plan that Donald Trump had that came this close to succeeding. And you know what they say? What is it? What do you call a failed coup? Practice! I don't get it. I just don't fucking get it. So yes, I'm frustrated. I'm very frustrated. So you know who these Republicans are. And in fact, I got a song for them, and it's not going to be my typical fuck you song, though we could do that, because, you know, I'm in that kind of a mood. But the party of no, Mitch McConnell, the arbiter of no, because he's going to tell his 50 senators, or 49 if you include him, what they can and can't vote for. So our friends at the Parody Project have a new song, and it's actually not Don Caron singing it. But this is, I think, a perfect way to get to our guest. Jennifer Taub is going to be joining us in a few minutes. You know her book. Her book is Big Dirty Money, and it's the paperback comes out tomorrow, and it's got a new subtitle, and we'll get into all that in a moment. But this song is the perfect. Oh, a little less gain. I'm overmodulating when I yell, huh? I'm sorry, Bella Lugrisi. I'm so sorry. So this song is from the Parody Project with help from, I want to get her name correct, Deborah Bowman and what? And what? I can't find. I'll find Deborah Bowman and Cinnabot Video. All right. This is a treat. I hope you enjoy this. Let me get it up on the screen. And okay. Why is that not working? Hold on. I got to bring it down here. I try so hard to make this a flawless show for you. And you know, occasionally I screw up. All right. So, there it is. Okay. Now I got it in the right window. Here we go. Freedom Toast with Deborah Bowman and Cinnabot Business and Cinnabot Video. There's no business like no business. Take it away, guys. Here we go.
Business like no business, like no business I know. Block knocking off Joe Biden's nominations. Filibuster just around the bend. Freezing up some needed legislation means we'll be justified by the end. There's no people like no people. Their truth standards are low. Johnson and Gates are secretly unhappy men because McConnell, McCarthy, Ron Johnson and Gates, there's only 12% that likes their laws. They'd never bid their right-wing base goodbye for any true conservative, and why? There's no business like no business, and they tell you it's so. Traveling through the country is so thrilling. Going through D.C. and starting fights. Smiling while they brawl and lose a feeling. Always voting so you lose rights. There's no people like no people. Their poll numbers are low. Republicans come at you with a tire jack, 'cause they go on with the no. There's no business like no business like no business, I know. You get word before debate is finished that your bill has been all watered down. All its impact has now been
Let's go on with the no. No business. Like, no business. Yeah. So it's a good time to segue to our guest. Hey, Jennifer Taub. She's the author of Big Dirty Money, which is out tomorrow in paperback with the new subtitle of Making White Collar Criminals Pay. Oh, if only. Hi, Jen. Welcome back to the show.
Hi. It's just so great to be here. I have a confession for you, Nicole.
What's that?
When I was at summer camp as a teenager.
You were an Annie Get Your Gun.
Damn right I was.
Who wasn't? You know, that first of all, it's a great song. Second of all, they did a really wonderful version of that. And it is no business. This is all the Republicans do, especially under Mitch McConnell. They say no to everything. They say no to ensuring the good faith and credit of the United States. I was just reading this poll that the Politico put out with Morning Consult that said, if we do default, which, you know, if it happens, it's only going to be because the Republicans will not vote to raise the debt ceiling for money that they agreed to spend, that more people say, you know, it's the Democrats' fault than the Republicans. And that I blame on the media, because they don't do a good job of explaining what's going on.
I think that's right. I mean, some of this is easy to explain, as that song has shown. Some of it is more difficult to explain. But I think at the heart of this is such tremendous hypocrisy. I mean, I don't need to tell you or your listeners or watchers that this is the same group who said the opposite thing. Like, we would never default.
Right.
And raising the debt ceiling is our obligation because we have made these promises and we've spent the money already. I mean, I could, you know, we could have a whole separate conversation if we brought also in with us. That's all right. It's just patron of the book, you know, Stephanie Kelton, who I'm sure you're aware of.
I know very well. She's been on the show many times.
So, you know, if you want to get really into the details, you know, her conversation about why deficits don't matter.
Yep.
But this is just, you know, utter hypocrisy, unnecessary. And it's not so much of a bargaining chip with the Democrats in Congress. It's actually quite similar to the smoke and mirrors and lies that their dear leader, Donald Trump, engages in. This is really not that many steps away from him lying about the Arizona, you know, fraud it.
That's
or
right.
Him lying, the big lie. I mean, the game that Republicans are playing here is quite, it's feeble. And it's fraudulent, and it's very frustrating. So I got all my F's there, except the big one, which I'm trying not to say.
Oh,
these
it's okay.
Days.
I've already let loose about a dozen times today because I'm in a mood. So, but you know, apparently the former guy did a rally Saturday night in Georgia. I try not to pay attention to him, but the thing that got me is, you know, coming off the fraud in Arizona, which we learned, you know, had no semblance of credibility or anything about it. But even they found that Biden won, but by a larger margin than the Arizona tally came up with in the first place. And Donald Trump gets up on that stage in Georgia and says, we won the fraud it. He didn't call it the fraud it, but that proves we won. He lies every time he opens his mouth and these idiots just buy it.
You know, this is the dude who had a fake university.
Yeah.
And the people who he cheated out of tens of thousands of dollars, many of them voted for him, right? Didn't he settle that civil RICO case for $40 million after he was elected?
Yeah.
I mean, as someone who has studied business fraud, you know, for ages, and, you know, telemarketing scams and everything like that, you know, there's something very sad, Nicole. I'm sure you've probably heard something like this. But like for people who want to conduct a marketing scam, they like calling lists. And the best people to call are those people who've been cheated out of their money before.
Oh, sure.
Go
because
figure.
They're
Go
marks.
Figure.
You know, Donald Trump is your classic con man. Keith Olbermann used to refer to Glenn Beck as what Henry Hill, the guy from The Music Man. But
right.
The difference, and I make that, you know, that connection all the time. The problem is Henry Hill was sort of rehabilitated at the end. He turned out to be okay. He admitted to his scamming ways, and, you know, and they all lived happily ever after. That doesn't happen in real life. He just keeps scamming people. He is a con man, and it blows my mind how many people buy into his con.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so glad we're just, you know, this is like, you know, the musical version of your show. And, you know, we start with Andy, Get Your Gun,
right.
And now we're at the
Music Man.
And yeah, I mean, and the thing about Henry Hill is he was a little charming, he gets rehabilitated, and he could actually sing.
That's right.
You know.
And the kids miraculously learned how to play their 76 trombones, and they led the big parade. And it was, you know, but that's not real life. That's a
right.
musical. I wish we could go live in a musical where everything works
no,
out well at the
don't.
End.
You don't. Did you see Schmigadoon?
Oh, I did. It was horrible. Just, it was terrible.
I liked
did
it,
you?
But it was very disorienting.
Oh,
yeah.
I couldn't get through. I made it through the first episode, couldn't even get into the second one. Just couldn't do it. Yeah. And I love musicals. So go figure.
Maybe that's why.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we laugh, but this is it's no accident that we're talking about sort of make-believe where bad guys can be rehabilitated. And I think some of the make-believe a lot of people want to engage in, even people who don't like Trump and so on, is, you know, we just want a happy ending so we can, the lights will come on and we can just like throw our popcorn cartons away and just go on with reality. But the thing is, when reality is surreal and filled with fiction, it doesn't end unless someone admits that it's just a movie. And
right,
in other words, it's
right.
all an act with Trump. And apologies, if you hear something being chewed, I mean, I have this on so you don't hear the background noise, but my dog, Ponzu, likes to chew cardboard. So if you hear the crunching sound,
that's
it's
quite
not
all right. We
my
love
brain.
Animals have free reign on this show. They can do whatever they
uh-oh.
Want. Anything
don't tell
they
him
want.
That. Okay.
Jackson runs my life. My Jackson Brown. He's, you know, Yeah. So anyway.
Again, a singer.
Of course. Well, I came from a music background. I did music radio for most of my career. I would love to tell you something. Right now, if someone offered me a job on a good music station, I don't just do any kind of music. I did, this is going way out in the weeds, but AAA radio, adult album alternative, like adventurous radio that hardly exists anymore. They're in a handful of cities still. Where are you? Are you in D.C.?
No, I actually live in Northampton, Massachusetts, a college town.
You have a good radio station there. In fact, it's the station that Rachel Maddow came out of. And I can't think of the name of it, but it's a good AAA station. My last music station that I programmed was The River in Boston. So that's the kind of music that I like. And I'd go back to that in a heartbeat to stop talking about this shit every day. Oh my God. I'm so over it. So I've been in it sort of like in that mind frame because I just can't stand this. I'm watching
this. This is
what's
a public service, right? I think people make the mistake that people like you or people like me, you know, are so happy to talk about this stuff.
Hate it.
You know, no. I want to talk about, the next season of Succession and Ted Lasso.
Loving Ted Lasso, by the way. It started off really kind of silly and goofy, and my husband, the first episode, he's like, this is not for me. And I kept watching it. That show has gotten really good. I cried at the funeral. Oh, my God.
And I've seen it, but I know. I felt that.
That's all I'll say, is I cried.
Yes.
At Ted Lasso. So that's a good show. Yes. I haven't watched Succession yet, but I guess I need to give that a shot. See, I'm trying
but
to
I want
do
reality
anything.
To be boring and
so
more predictable.
I.
And I want to be an advocate for progress. But I feel like having to spend your time saying this dude and all the people who support him are just lying. And, you know, and the lies, you know, some the lies are deadly. Speaking of funerals, right?
Yes,
what is it? 670,000 people. I mean, you hear story after story of people who told not to get the vaccine and die these painful, awful, lonely deaths.
That's right.
And that's on him. And that's on a whole host of people like Tucker Carlson and the rest of it. And I just, I want that to stop.
You and me both.
It's gonna take people who believe in that to wake up, and I don't know what it will take for them to wake up.
Well, maybe some of these white collar criminals being prosecuted. Here's how we segue into the book. So it's out in paperback tomorrow. Thank you, and with a new subtitle, making white collar criminals pay, and a new epilogue, which brings us up to date on some of the things going on now. And I don't know if you saw it, the little show card. I put together like a show card for every program. So this is today's. And I highlighted, it's coming. Let's go through the animation thing here.
Oh, look at that.
PG&E, the Sackler family, who's Purdue Pharma, Wells Fargo, Donald Trump, Elizabeth, whatever her name is, from
Holmes.
Elizabeth Holmes from Theramos, who's on trial now, and General Motors. Just some of the companies, the white collar criminals who are out there with giant suits against them that have not paid any kind of price yet, and hopefully they will. I'd like to see some of them go to jail with Donald Trump at the top of the list.
Yeah, I'm so glad you read the new epilogue, because what I have to tell you, so this book, the original book came out a year ago.
Right.
And so, in the spring when I wrote, new introduction and then this epilogue, Crime After Trump, it was my moment to sort of say, okay, what's happened to some of these characters, as you mentioned, these big corporations, these either convicted felons or accused felons. And I was honestly shocked. You take a company like, General Motors, and you think, okay, they went through a lot. They admitted trouble with the ignition switch that killed a ton of people, even though they covered some of the deaths up and made people believe they had killed their fiance. It was terrible. So you would think that they'd be super careful. And then you come to find out that they're about to invest, what was it, $1 billion, more than $1 billion, in a company run by a fraudster.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were confronted about it, they acted like everything was under control. That was Mary Barra there. And then, you look at a company like Wells Fargo, and we all know about the over 2 million accounts they opened without authorization. And I sort of make this joke in the epilogue saying you would think that on everyone's desk, or on their home screen at Wells Fargo would say, do not open up accounts without people's authorization. And they went ahead and did stuff like beginning foreclosure proceedings. If you can believe this, I just have to tell you this because I'm sure folks haven't read this and they may not have followed it in the news, but Wells Fargo, of all banks who should have been on its best behavior, during COVID, you know, there was relief allowed for people. So if you and I, if you were having trouble paying your mortgage, Nicole, you could have called up your bank, your mortgage servicer, and said, I need a little time, right? Mm-hmm. And this was a fantastic thing that the Federal Housing Finance Administration was doing. And they were going to allow loans that they backed people to kind of extend and take a break on their mortgage, get some relief. And of course, no bank is going to do that unless there's something in it for them. So banks were given a little, you know, couple hundred dollars if they allowed for a kind of extension. In addition, there were people who, if they ended up in bankruptcy because they just fell behind because of COVID, there was also this extra, you know, money to be given. So Wells Fargo actually did this. I just, even saying it out loud is disgusting. If I called up on the phone and did not actually ask to have my mortgage not be deducted from my bank account, because, you know, if I asked, you know, if I didn't even say anything about wanting to halt my payments, I just simply seemed like I might be having a little financial trouble, or maybe I missed a credit card payment, they automatically, without my consent, without a customer's consent, stopped deducting their mortgage payments without telling people. And people don't always notice what's coming out of their bank account.
Right.
And then some people actually were put into bankruptcy as a result of that.
Oh my
and
God.
So there was this, you know, yet again, these things that Wells Fargo was doing. And it kind of goes on and on. I mean, PG&E, the electric company. I don't want to tell everything in the epilogue. Please buy the book, you know, but but the idea is, you know, one of the people I write about in there is Elizabeth Holmes, and her trial is happening right now in Silicon Valley for faking these, you know, blood test technology and, you know, essentially defrauding investors. So that's
for a lot of money. Like, that was a big, big case.
Yes.
And I'm frankly, I'm surprised I'm not hearing more about the trial.
Well,
I mean, leading the news every night is a missing young woman. And I'm terribly sorry for her and her family. But seriously, I mean, I turned on the TV this morning on CNN at 6 a.m. because I'm always up. And their first story was about that with the week that we have ahead of us. That's what they lead with. I just don't get it.
I hate to say negative things about judges, but here I go. The judge in the Elizabeth Holmes case is only permitting the trial to be viewed in the courtroom and on site. There might be a spillover room. There is no Zoom. Wow. This is a story of national interest.
Yeah.
And so there are only like 70 people, like, you know, I don't know what the spillover room has. So you had to actually either, you know, you had to be in line, you had to be located in Northern California. I can't tell you how disappointed I was, because I was going to watch that. Not only that, you know, there are these rules that you're not allowed to take screenshots or show video clips. And I'm thinking, that's inexcusable. I understand that a judge in their own mind could justify it by saying, well, you know, if there weren't anything like cameras in the courtroom, then there would just be whoever, it would just be open to the public who could show up. But that's ridiculous.
This is 2021. It's not 1975 anymore, right?
And it's not like you know, the thing about having Zoom is you're not making it, if you put it on Zoom, you're not going to turn it into an MSNBC or a CBS or an ABC or a Fox News thing where people can just do sound bites, because anyone can look at the whole thing.
Right.
I mean, I think there are judges who are afraid that the story will be distorted. Or maybe they're afraid that if they have it available that way, that there'll be commentary and the jury will hear about it. But this is a story of national interest.
For those who aren't, Jennifer, for those who aren't familiar with it, why don't you tell them what Elizabeth Holmes did or is accused of doing? I know she did it, but, you know, we have this, you know, innocent until proven guilty. What is she accused of? What did she do? And there was a documentary on it not too long ago that we watched that was terrifying. It's amazing how big of a con she was able to pull off. She was very Trumpian, but so yeah, you tell us what she did.
Yeah. Okay. So it's truly amazing, right? So she was, just to give you her background, she was this wunderkind, to make a little reference to Ted Lasso,
yes.
not wunderkind.
Yes.
So as she graduated, actually, I'm sorry, she dropped out of Stanford University.
Oh, boy. Okay.
But, you know, but
she got into Stanford.
But that's what, you know, the big boys in Silicon Valley do, right? Didn't Bill Gates drop out of Harvard or something? Who knows? Anyway, so she dropped out in 2003 from Stanford University to start a startup company called Theranos. And when you watch her little propaganda videos, it sounds like a nice story. Her idea was, you know, she says the story, it's sort of like a heartfelt story, which might be true, that she had an uncle who had died, and it was upsetting to her. She felt like if he could have had blood testing more frequently, either whatever he had would have been diagnosed sooner, or he could have gotten better treatment. That's like the underlying story. And she came to this conclusion that people don't like to get their blood drawn. I think that's true.
It is, yeah.
And that it's scary. They call that, I think, venipuncture. That's what when you draw your blood from, you know, your arm.
Right.
But that they would rather get their finger stuck. I'm not sure about that. I don't
the
love
finger
getting my
perks fingers hurt, but
those,
you know,
scare me more. But
point.
For some people, but they're easier to administer.
Okay.
A finger prick. You don't have to be that trained.
Right.
Right. And so she came up with this idea that wouldn't it be great if people could just either at home or at a local drugstore, get their finger pricked, get a drop or two of blood, and use that Ponzu, start chewing. Chewing a Coke bottle.
Oh, okay.
Wouldn't it be great if they could just use that small amount of blood to run a whole host of tests, a battery of tests?
Right.
And so that in and of itself, is pretty innovative. You can't hear it?
But it's okay. Don't worry about it.
Okay. So that in and of itself would be innovative because it would make people not having to make a doctor's appointment. It'd be less scary and so on. But there were a lot of problems even with this idea because with a small amount of blood, if you're running a bunch of tests, you sometimes need more volume of blood to do what you're doing.
Right.
But in addition to wanting to do that, so that would have taken a scientific solution. She also wanted to be able to all the tests done in a little black box. And I got to tell you, Nicole, whenever someone says black box, I'm reminded me of the actual origin of the black box story, which was a fraud. But she believed that there'd be, if they could figure out the technology, they could have these special little boxes that weren't very big at all, where the blood tests could be done. So they could be done on site, you know, not necessarily at your home right away, but without having to be sent off to a major lab.
Right.
And she was trying to compete with a company called Quest. And I forget who the other big
LabCorp, Quest and LabCorp. I mean, when I get labs, they're done at Quest because that's my insurance.
Right.
So those are the two bigs. And this was supposed to be a much easier, simpler, cheaper way to get all your blood work done. You don't have to go to them. You can just do a fingerprint prick and you're done.
You know, and I am a person who loves good ideas. Like I would love the idea of a chocolate cake and a taco truck where I could eat the food and it would only have the exact number of calories I needed to maintain a healthy weight.
That would be
And
nice.
Wouldn't it be great if that could happen?
Yeah.
But it would be like me going out and then raising $9 billion, you know, raising billions of dollars. So what she was able to do is she was able to start a company and take it public based on an idea. And that happened. You know, Amazon didn't really make money right away, but it was actually selling books. That's the difference. And she was able to get that company stock up to $9 billion by 2015. So that's in 12 years.
Wow.
But it turns out that they were falsifying blood test results. They would do things when they were doing these like tests and studies. I mean, the book is incredible by John Carreyrou. I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
I don't know.
The journalist in the Wall Street Journal who broke the story wrote this book, Bad Blood. But they would sometimes just like send they would secretly like send the blood off to really get analyzed in a real lab instead of just this little box.
Oh my God. Anyway,
so at the end of the day, so she gets this company worth $9 billion. She would tell these lies. She claimed that the Department of Defense was using their blood analyzer products on the battlefield in Afghanistan. She said that, and that wasn't true. She also, you know, the company claimed they'd bring in more than $100 million. They said they'd bring in more than $100 million in revenue in 2014, but the fact was that they only generated $100,000 in revenue. I mean,
that's a big disparity. So this is a huge scam,
right? Yes, and the thing is, that's really the worst part about it is it wasn't victimless,
right?
I mean, there were
all the investors.
Well, the investors lost, but there were people who, a woman who suffered a miscarriage because of a false test. Ooh. There was someone who was wrongly diagnosed with HIV. There's a whole bunch of stories. There was someone who was told they weren't pregnant, but they didn't believe it. And they went and got a different test. It turns out they had an ectopic pregnancy. I mean, the stories are horror stories.
Oh, my God.
And so, you know, that's what's going on. And she actually, you know, even before we found out her approach to the trial, she saw herself as a victim. She's the victim of everything. And I don't know if you saw what she is trying to do, but she's trying to blame everything on her ex-boyfriend, who was an executive at the company, claiming that she's a victim of emotional and maybe physical abuse.
Oh, God.
And that it was that caused her not to be thinking in her right mind. And therefore, that is what caused her. That's why she's claiming she couldn't have the intent to commit fraud, even though, I mean, they're not doubting now. There's no way to say anything, you know, other than that these were untrue.
Right.
So the best thing she's going for is she couldn't form the criminal intent, but she's also going for what we all know is fragile white womanhood. And let me just be clear. I think it's terrible to be emotionally and physically abused. I will mm-hmm. never defend batterers, but I have no evidence whether this happened or didn't happen, but I know a lot of women who've been in relationships subject to mental or physical abuse, and they don't steal hundreds of millions of dollars from investors. That's not usually right. the way it works. So,
yeah,
you know,
one
I don't
doesn't
see
make
that as
the other
excuse.
One. They're mutually exclusive. One has nothing to do with the other. I'm sorry if that's the truth, what she was going through, but that doesn't excuse her defrauding thousands of people out of millions and millions of dollars.
It's like the influenza defense for the female version. Remember Ethan Crouch or whatever his name, or Couch?
Who affluenza. Had... Affluenza.
Affluenza, not influenza. Right. I'm sorry. I have COVID on the brain.
I hear you. No, yeah. He said, this was a direct result of being raised with everything he could ever want and being a spoiled brat that he turned out rotten. Sorry. Not,
but that
not
worked
excuse.
In his first case.
Yeah, well, because he got a judge. Right.
A judge who was like, well, he looks a little like me when I was young. He didn't say that, but you know that's what he was thinking.
Of course. You know, I got to say, so this is going on, the trial, it's maybe a week or two in now. I don't know how much longer it's going to go. But this case has been brewing for a while, right? So you said it was 2015, the company was worth $9 billion. Well, that's 6 years ago already. So what's been going on? And I say, if you are rich in this country and you have a lot of money, you get away with this shit, like the Sackler family. I'm sorry, they paid how much in how many billions, which doesn't even make a dent. It's probably like 25 bucks to me. And
yeah,
right? But I look at R. Kelly. So R. Kelly is now today,
that was today the verdict.
Guilty of not only RICO charges, but he's guilty on all charges, including child sex trafficking and everything. But this has been going on for, what, 20 years? So he was able to push it off and push it off and push it off because he had money to pay attorneys to keep drawing it out. So great, he's going to spend the rest of his life in jail, or he should, but he should have been in jail 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Prevention can come through early detection and punishment. And you look at someone like Epstein, Jeffrey Epstein, who, you know, whether he was killed or whether he committed suicide because he wasn't watched well in prison, that was a guy who should have been shut down long ago. And if you look at the stories of that, it could have happened earlier if they had believed the young women. Similar case with R. Kelly.
That's right.
You know, and, you know, similar case with Donald Trump, and not just in terms of the allegations of abuse of people, but he is, as you said earlier, the classic con artist. And he, you know, when you let someone who has been a con artist become president, and you let them do this because, you know, there was that piece by Robert Kagan about the way politicians, you know, the way tyrants and authoritarians, if you appease them, they'll grow more stronger. Or Ruth Ben-Ghiat, who talks about, you know, dictators. We don't even need to we wouldn't have had to be pointing to Mussolini and Hitler if someone had just noticed that this guy was Charles Ponzi.
Right.
Like you need to shut down white collar criminals because they have more money and power, and they have the ability to use propaganda which is what con is. You know, they use charm and propaganda and bullying and sort of mob tactics. That's what con artists do.
Right.
And when no one, when the SEC weakly settled many years ago civil cases, when the New York case was settled as a civil RICO case and not a criminal case. I could go on and on and on. There were involving his casino. There's so many different examples. They're in there in the book where they went with a gentlemanly slap on the wrist, pay a little money back for Trump. Is it any wonder that he's still using his con artistry?
No.
To do the same thing he did. And let me just say, you know, shame on the people who let it by, but now we know. And so where the focus of my, you know, white hot ire, is that the hottest part of the flame or is it blue?
I think blue, but okay, it works. So.
Okay, yeah. Blue hot ire right now is Merrick Garland. And in the book, I try to be more optimistic than I do in my tweets, where I say I'm hopeful that he's going to do something, but I am watching the clock tick, Nicole, and we are getting on into 5 years after the Stormy Daniels payment, and it's crickets. And I know the DOJ isn't supposed to make particular announcements, but here's what I think. I think it's a scam, a shame, and honestly disappointing that there hasn't been a special counsel appointed for every single criminal case involving Trump. And here's why. Garland decided to pick up from Bill Barr the representation of Donald Trump in an action that E. Jean Carroll brought against him.
Yep.
You cannot prosecute someone who you are also defending. That is conflicts of interest 101. So if he would appoint a special counsel or several of them to deal with the various cases against Trump that began when Barr was in office, that seemed to have gone away, like the campaign finance violation involving Michael Comer's individual one, like the obstruction of justice. You know, I'm talking to the choir. Right. Like what's going on in Georgia, where there are federal charges associated with that could be brought, conspiracy against the United States. We could go on and on these things. You need independent counsels to deal with each of these things. And if he announced that he had referred this to an independent counsel, then a lot of us would be like, okay.
At least something's happening here.
And but as for the Mueller report, you don't need much of an independent counsel. You just need 5 days for them to look through, read the report and read all the accompanying exhibits and then bring charges.
Yeah.
And the only reason why I believe he is not charging Trump for obstruction of justice is because I sadly believe it must be that Garland believes under Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution that a president can't obstruct justice, because if he doesn't charge him, that can be the only explanation, because I believe there's probable cause laid out meticulously in the Mueller report.
And you are,
and so I sit here going, are you effing kidding me?
Right.
And also, you know, this is not just on Garland. It's also on Joe Biden, as much as I love him, because we are going to have President Trump in 4 years. And, you know, I never said he's not my president, but if he's elected again, I will not only say he's not my president, I will say this is not my country, because this is now a lawless country. I will live here and pay my taxes, but I will have no respect for the institution
the
of
fact,
our government.
Jen, the fact that Donald Trump is normalized, the fact that he is still the leader of the Republican Party is just... it's unbelievable. We are living in an alternate reality. I mean, Kellyanne Conway is the one who coined the phrase alternate facts. This is an alternate reality. We are living in what I've always called opposite world, but it's on a whole new level. Nothing makes sense. And the fact that, you know, people in the media or others just talk, give him the benefit of the doubt. It's like, oh, well, he was president. I'm sorry. He was an illegitimate president. He lied and cheated his way into office. And then he turns around and says, we stole the election from him.
Oh, everything. And let's go back to where you started. I mean, we didn't even get to talk about that, but he admitted he provided at one of the rallies over the weekend evidence to show that he had the criminal intent to interfere in a national election. I mean, this gets us, I don't need to go through all the elements, but this is clearly a conspiracy against the United States.
And what I said, what I started off the show today.
That's a conspiracy to defraud the United States, 18 USC 371 to be
okay,
exact.
Good to know from the lawyer here. But when I started off the show, what got me so riled up was talking about that 6-point plan that was published last week that I read on by John Eastman, right? Not one network news program mentioned it. NBC, ABC, CBS, none of them reported on it. And NBC, the only time on that network's air that it was mentioned was Seth Meyers.
Are you kidding?
I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. So that is dereliction of their duty. The news media is treating him as if he's a legitimate political operator. And he is not. He's a con man and a fraud and a liar, and he's trying to overthrow the government. And they're going, ho-hum, he'll probably be the nominee in 2024. Well, no, that's not okay. And it's their responsibility to say that to the American people, and they're not.
Oof.
Yeah.
It's sad. I just have the biggest sigh because there's a way, if folks thought that was too complicated, there's a way to make it clear. You know, you don't have to go through all the legal backing of the 6-point plan. You can just say this is more evidence that Trump was going to try to steal the office and overthrow the election.
Right. And how close they came to doing it. And now they're setting everything up in all these states to be able to do it next time. So anytime the Democrats win an election, they're going to challenge the veracity of it. They're going to say that it's not legit, and so we need to redo it or throw out the results. But I guarantee you, if they win, all's well. It turned out the way it's supposed to.
And well, of course.
So what are we supposed to do?
You know, I'm just thinking when you're talking about this, it reminds me when I was a kid and you'd play board games. And I remember my parents telling me, you know, someone who cheats in high school sports or someone who cheats on a board game, they may say it's not real life, but it's cheating and that's who they're going to be.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, you know, if there was a friend that you had or a neighborhood kid that you played a board game with and they cheated, would you play with them again?
No. But Donald Trump's the kind of guy you'd be playing Monopoly with him, and it's clear he's going to lose, and he'd throw over the board, right? You know those people. That's who he is.
Right. And so I think the news media should say these are cheaters and we're not going to have liars on our show. Boom.
The problem is there's news and there's news. And you've got Fox and OAN and Newsmax, and they're willing to just lie the same way the president or former guy did. We're at the point now where 78% of Republicans do not believe Joe Biden won the election.
But here's what made me feel better. That's terrible. But I saw something that Joe Scarborough tweeted out the other day. What was it? Like over 200 million people have gotten the vaccine.
Okay.
And only 70 something million voted for Trump. I mean, so that makes me feel better.
Okay.
The trouble is the people who get the vaccine, a lot of them are children. A lot of them are people who don't vote.
Right. A lot of them are people who don't vote. Right.
We need, you know, and they're making it harder for people to vote.
Yeah.
I mean, so.
And making it easier to throw out the results of an election if they don't
like the
outcome.
Right. I mean, trying to use the really arcane constitutional process to let the states that have Republican-led legislatures and governors just say, that's who won. I don't think so.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's not, we got a problem here. And I agree with Robert Kagan and others. We are in a constitutional crisis right now. And so in a crisis, what do? You fix things. And I think, you know, this is exactly why we need voting rights legislation passed.
Yes.
And, Joe Biden needs to figure out how to get Sinema and Manchin on board and do it.
And as you mentioned, the book is out in paperback tomorrow. And you wanted to use it as a way to, you know, call out Merrick Garland to make him get on the job and do what he's in that office to do. So how do we do that? What do we do?
What do we do?
What do we
say? I haven't done one of these calling campaigns in a long time, but maybe it's time to call the Maine Department of Justice and say, ask Garland to appoint a special counsel and say, how can you represent Donald Trump and also be investigating cases against him, and ask for special counsel to be appointed. And all of the criminal matters that were uncovered prior to his arrival, which is everything we're talking about.
Got it. Well, we need to do something because Merrick Garland, you know, I let out a big groan when he was announced as Biden's pick for attorney general. And I thought, well, maybe, you know, payback's a bitch. But he's not that guy. He's the Republican. You know, that was a bad Supreme Court choice for Obama in the first place.
What frustrates me so incredibly is that I had to feel grateful that he did the right thing when it came to the Texas abortion law. That's the bare minimum.
Yeah.
I mean, write a really good brief that says Roe versus Wade is the law of the land and Casey is still good law.
Yeah, but that should be a given.
This is a given.
Right. So
that, and we're supposed to be so excited about that. I'm not, you know, because right. I think that's great. But I spent a lot, many, many years focused on the relationship between white collar crime and political corruption. And we are now at that intersection and it's on Garland to fix it.
Yes, right it is. Jennifer Taub, the book, Big Dirty Money, the paperback is out officially tomorrow. So go get it with the new epilogue and a half of a new title. Jen, thank you so much for coming on today. It was great to talk with you. Sorry about my mood. It's just, you know, there are just some days I just can't take it anymore. I feel like
Howard
Beale.
You can always, you know what? I'm with you at all times. I'm a tough cookie.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, you're welcome back anytime. Great to see you. Thanks for hanging. Congratulations on the book, and we'll talk again soon. Follow
so
Jen on Twitter, too, at Jen Taub, and I'll put links to everything on the blog at NicoleSandler.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. And with that, we're done. That's it for what day is today? Monday. It's Monday. All right. We'll do it tomorrow. Oh, big day tomorrow. Last week, we spoke with Nikki Fried, who is running for governor of the state of Florida, where I live. Tomorrow, Charlie Crist, who is also running for governor of Florida. And he's already held that job. So it'll be interesting. And I'm going to be fair. Not fair and balanced, but I will be fair. I'm not the biggest Charlie Crist fan, but I'll be fair. I still haven't decided who I'm voting for, so we'll see. All right, with that, we're done. I will leave you with the news, such as it is. Have a good one, everyone, and I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It's a new week with some big issues on the table. Strap in for what promises to be a roller coaster ride of epic proportions. Here's what's at stake. Let's start with government funding and the debt limit. If a new funding bill isn't passed, the government will shut down on Friday. And if the debt ceiling isn't raised soon, the U.S. could default for the first time in history, something that simply cannot happen. So the Senate is set to vote on a cloture motion today, Monday, to proceed to the short-term funding bill passed by the House this weekend, which would keep federal agencies open until December 3rd while suspending the debt limit until December of 2022. Good start, but that'll fail since Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and his Republican colleagues are opposed to any increase of the debt limit, despite the fact that the former failed Republican president raised the debt by some $7 trillion. So what happens after that? Well, we don't know. There are a few scenarios that could play out, but nothing concrete and nothing sure to fix the problem. Then there's the dual infrastructure bills. Nancy Pelosi brings the so-called bipartisan bill, or BIF, to the floor on Monday, setting up a vote on Thursday while she and Chuck Schumer work on something to offer progressives on the reconciliation package by then. The reasoning is reportedly that if Pelosi can show progressives that there is substantial momentum on the reconciliation package, even if it's not yet complete, she can hold down no votes among progressives. And that she'd use Thursday's expiration of transportation spending authority as a talking point to say that Congress needs to act and the work on the infrastructure will continue. But there's no deal on a top line number yet. Pelosi made it clear during her Sunday morning appearance on ABC's This Week that the overall cost will be less than $3.5 trillion. But she didn't say how much, or even give an idea of what the tax provisions would look like, or how big the policy fights among the Democrats on Medicare, Medicaid, and Obamacare are going to be resolved between the progressives and the conservadems or corporate dems or whatever you want to call them, but not centrists or moderates. Goes like this. The conservadems expected the president to start putting pressure on the progressives during their meeting at the White House last week. But apparently that didn't happen. Reports say that the president neither asked them to drop their demand that the reconciliation bill pass in tandem with the BIF or pressed them to accept a standalone vote on the BIF this week. The progressive Democrats believe that Biden and Pelosi agree with them that both bills should move together. And I think they're right. The White House has never strayed from the idea that they need both bills to pass concurrently. So as for how this will play out, well, here's Nancy Pelosi on ABC's This Week.
First of all, we have to make sure we keep government open, and we will. Second of all, we have to honor the vision of President Biden, and we thank him for his leadership and his courage putting forth such a bold package. And what President has put forth will create many, many more good-paying jobs, especially in terms of addressing the climate crisis, which has not been fully addressed in the infrastructure bill. It will lower costs for families by lowering the cost of prescription drugs for seniors and health care costs across the board. It will give one of the largest tax cuts for the middle class with the Biden child tax credit, and it will be paid for by making everyone pay their fair share. Lower cost, tax cuts, paid for, more jobs. Let me just say we're going to pass the bill this week. But you know, I'm never bringing a bill to the floor that doesn't have the votes.
So as I said, strap in. This will be one hell of a ride. There are lots of elections around the world this weekend, and it's interesting that countries like Germany, Switzerland, Iceland, and others vote on weekends. It makes it easier for working people to vote, you know? Well, Germany went to the polls to figure out who will replace Chancellor Angela Merkel, who is stepping down after 16 years. The results? The center-left Social Democrats narrowly defeated Merkel's party, the center-right Christian Democrats. That means that Olaf Scholz, who's the Social Democrats' pick for chancellor, is in the strongest position to form a coalition government. But the process could take a while because he needs support of the other parties. Merkel will remain in power until the new chancellor is ready to take over. In Switzerland, voters went to the polls and on Sunday overwhelmingly approved legalizing same-sex marriage, with 64.1% of the people casting ballots in favor of the change to the country's law. Voters also approved letting lesbian couples access sperm banks and allowing same-sex couples to adopt children. Switzerland was one of the last countries in Western Europe to accept same-sex marriage, though same-sex couples have been permitted to enter civil partnerships with some legal rights since 2007. Iceland went to the polls, and they elected their first female-majority parliament over the weekend, making it the only nation in Europe with female lawmakers outnumbering the men. With all votes counted on Sunday, women held 33 seats in Iceland's 63-seat parliament. Iceland was ranked the world's most gender-equal nation for the 12th straight year in a World Economic Forum report released in March. It offers men and women the same parental leave, and they passed their first law on equal pay for men and women in 1961. And 41 years ago, Iceland became the first country to elect a female president. But there was more. The tiny nation of San Marino voted on Sunday and overwhelmingly backed a proposal to legalize abortion. San Marino is surrounded by Italy and it boasts just 33,000 residents. About 77% of those casting ballots in the referendum supported making abortion legal in the first 12 weeks of pregnancy, rejecting a 150-year-old law that criminalized the procedure. San Marino is one of the world's oldest republics. It's also one of the last European states to legalize abortion. It's still illegal in Malta and Andorra. And Poland introduced a near total ban this year. Maybe the Republicans from Texas would want to move there. Just a thought. An Amtrak train derailed on Saturday, 3 people killed and dozens injured, when 8 of the train's 10 cars derailed in Montana. The National Transportation Safety Board will hold briefings with any updates on the victims and the cause of the disaster. But this might be a good time to say we really need an infrastructure bill. Just saying. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I really can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.